Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 8, 2022, Section A. Fed ramping up oil production is not easy. Calls continue for oil companies to produce more oil to help cut energy prices. Those calls have now joined by calls for refiners to not only produce more gasoline, but to cut prices. Among those seeking to educate the public on just how oil markets work are economists in the Federal Reserve banking system. "We're the only Federal Reserve bank with a dedicated energy team," pointed out Garrett Golding, a business economist. We are playing point man on energy for the entire Federal Reserve system. Golding was participating in the monthly Oil Field Strong webinar presented by OTA Environmental Solutions. He told Grant Swartzwelder, president of OTA, that every Federal Reserve Bank maintains a blog on their websites, and the Dallas Fed blog often discusses energy-related issues. Asked by Swartzwelder, with tongue-in-cheek, why oil companies are being the bad guys in refusing to lower prices, Golding stressed that oil companies do not set oil prices, gasoline prices, or diesel prices. Those are commodities that are traded globally thousands of times a day. When it comes to companies producing more to lower prices, two things won't happen. One is we're already growing production. We anticipate U.S. production will grow by 700,000 barrels a day between the end of 21 and 22, the most growth from any producing country in those 12 months. The question is, how much more can they do? That means the ability to increase production is extremely limited, and not just by shareholders wanting more returns from public companies. Second, the industry has been hampered for over a year now by the inability to hire people or obtain equipment, which frequently has been backordered for 6 to 12 months. That's not enough to ramp up much beyond current plans. We won't know what 2023 will look like for companies until the end of the year. The paradigm of single-digit growth is here to stay. It's not a function of shareholders and producing profits, but how many rigs they can get out there and how many people are qualified to run them. That answer doesn't show up on the news every day or in political sound bites. Golding, who was with the Strategic Planning Department at Pioneer Natural Resources before joining the Fed, also countered criticism that operators are holding 9,000 drilling permits on federal leases that they aren't using. If you look out over the last 4 or 5 years, the number of permits issued and the number of wells drilled using those permits is roughly 50%. Companies have permits to have optionability on their leases and don't fully know what they own at the moment. But it's important to have those permits because they last 2 years and operators can keep extending them if they think it's an area they want to get into. The other piece of the equation is that between 2,000 and 3,000 wells are drilled on federal onshore lands anyway. To be very generous and say 5,000 permits are ready to be drilled, it would take a few years to get through that on top of all the logistics and labor issues we're talking about. In a lot of ways, the 9,000 drilling permits thing is borderline irrelevant because they're working through the inventory of permits they have and are doing so as fast as they can. Focusing on producers in the Dallas Banks area, which covers Texas, parts of New Mexico, and parts of Louisiana, Golding said he doesn't see much change in established plans. It would take a widespread macro event for us to see oil prices dip below $80 and start to potentially change the pace of drilling activity now. A lot of these companies, their communications to us over the last year has been to be on cruise control and prepare for a scenario like this. Don't ramp up capital expenditures when prices go up, so you're protected when prices do drop. With oil prices staying at a healthy level of $80 or above, we will see activity increase next year. It will take something catastrophic for that to change. It's hard to see where we can have acceleration beyond what's already planned, again, because of logistical issues, and there's debate on whether that is even doable. because of labor shortages. Truck drivers are in demand, and now he's hearing stories where the average tenure of works on a drilling rig is 6 months. That doesn't indicate a safe environment in my mind, but it illustrates how much we can accelerate activity beyond what's added every week. Gas prices drop in Midland can't keep up with state's decline. The average price of gasoline across the state dropped 16 cents this week. The decline in Midland and Odessa was less than half that. AAA Texas reported the price in the Petroplex cities dropped 7 cents, the smallest drop of the largest 27 metropolitan areas. One result of this week's metric was that the average price in Midland was 2 cents less than the state average. Last week, that difference was 11 cents. Midland went from being the 13th cheapest average of the largest cities to 17th. Odessa drop was more dramatic, moving from being tied for it with 8th with the cheapest to being tied for 15th for the cheapest. The largest weekly decline in 2022 for fuel prices is good news for drivers, but we're not out of the woods yet. Gas prices will remain elevated compared to 1 year ago and could fluctuate in July, which is typically one of the busiest months in Texas for road trips and fuel demand. Midland rent up 9.3% in a year. Rent increased by 9.3% in Midland during the last year, according to ApartmentList.com's July National Rent Report. The report stated Midland is the lowest rents of the larger cities in West Texas and are two of the lowest across the state. ApartmentList.com showed a median one-bedroom rent in Midland of $737 and a median two-bedroom rent of $934. In Odessa, those rents were $589 and $776. The rent report also showed rents in Midland have increased around $56 and $94 since the beginning of the year. In Odessa, those increases are $79 and $78. The Midland Police Department is seeking the public's help identifying four persons of interest in a homicide investigation. Police were dispatched Sunday around 11 o'clock to Spectrum Apartments in reference to a gunshot victim. The victim, Jason Jarrell Anders, 19, was pronounced deceased at the scene from a gunshot wound. Midland Crime Stoppers shared surveillance video of the four persons of interest in a homicide investigation walking across a parking lot. If a person has any information on the identity of the people of interest, call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS. No caller ID is ever used, and callers will remain anonymous. A Midland man was arrested Sunday on a sexual assault charge. Tony Curtis McCoy was being held Wednesday in Midland County Jail on second-degree felony charge of sexual assault. Midland police were dispatched Sunday in reference to the assault. The alleged victim told Officer McCoy had sexually assaulted her. Officers took the alleged victim, McCoy, and a second male to the police department for interviews. The victim stated she thought she was having sex with her partner, but then realized it wasn't him. She called her partner, who was sitting out on the patio, and told him what happened. Her partner then confronted McCoy. During his interview, McCoy told the officers it was a revenge, according to the arrest affidavit. He's being held on $75,000 bond. Adeen Seeley passed away on Sunday, July 3rd. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 9th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Benny Stevenson English passed away. Private graveside services will be held Friday, July 8th. Arrangements are under the direction of Rest Haven Funeral Home. Harold Don Brooks passed away on July 5th. Visitation with the family will be at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home on July 8th from 6 to 8 p.m. Memorial services will be Saturday at 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Norma Elaine Hicks passed away on April 30th. The family will host a celebration of life Saturday, July 9th at 11:30 a.m. at Christ Church Anglican in Midland. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Patricia Marlene Rash, 63, passed away on June the 30th. The family will receive friends on Friday, July 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh. Ronald Taylor passed away on June the 12th. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. on July 9th at the Chapel of the First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Fernando Duran Lopez passed away on July 6th. Visitation will be Friday, July 8th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to the funeral home.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 7th. Students shun oil industry degrees. Number of graduates is expected to drop 83% compared to 2017. The story was written by Diana Lee of Bloomberg. Scott Lindbergh's dreams of becoming a petroleum engineer was fueled by childhood drives through Texas oil country with his energy consultant father, passing pump jacks and pipeline hubs that kept the world's biggest economy humming. But after recently graduating with honors from the University of Texas at Austin with a petroleum engineering degree, Lindbergh is turning his back on the oil industry and plans to attend law school instead. His disenchantment is rooted in concern that fossil fuels may not have much of a future given increasing pressure from politicians, activists, and investors to pivot toward more climate-friendly energy sources. The 22-year-old Houston-area native illustrates an alarming trend for the top U.S. petroleum engineering programs, where enrollments are dwindling despite the surge in crude prices that historically prompted more aspirants to join the industry. This year, the number of new petroleum engineering graduates in the U.S. is expected to total about 400, an 83% decline from 2017, when they peaked at more than 2,300, according to Lloyd Hines, a Texas Tech University professor who tracks annual enrollments at more than three dozen petroleum schools around the world. Quote, "I was kind of concerned that if we eventually get to a point where fossil fuels are so disfavored that the jobs simply don't exist before I plan to retire," Lindbergh said, "I could lose my career if I stayed," end quote. At Lindbergh's alma mater, which he attended on a full scholarship, undergraduate enrollment in petroleum engineering dropped 11% between 2018 and 2021. Although benchmark American crude prices climbed 25% during that period, it was perhaps the most volatile era in the modern oil industry. In early 2020, the price temporarily went negative for the first time in history as energy demand collapsed in the wake of a worsening global pandemic. Historically, however, petroleum schools have seen influxes of new students when oil booms and the sector goes on hiring sprees. But with U.S. crude up more than 30% so far this year, the link appears to be broken. Quote, "Personally, I think we are heading to a bit of a crisis," said Jennifer Miskimmins, who leads the Petroleum Engineering Department at the Colorado School of Mines, one of the world's premier oil universities. Quote, "As petroleum engineers age, the industry will need to replace a retiring cohort of baby boomers. But we are not seeing enough petroleum engineers to fill the demand," end quote. During the shale revolution that unfolded during the first decade and a half of the century, enrollments soared and bachelor's degrees reached a record 2,326 in 2017, Texas Tech's Hines said. That will tumble to about 400 this year and remain in the 200 to 400 range annually for the next 10 years or so, he estimated. The reason why enrollment numbers no longer correlate with oil prices, according to Colorado School of Mines Miskimmins, is partly because of the energy transition. More students and parents are turned off by the sector, not necessarily because they are environmental advocates, but because they have concluded The switch will make oil and natural gas obsolete in 5 or 10 years, she said. To cope with falling petroleum engineering enrollments, universities across the country are trying to adapt. For example, the University of Texas is offering a new minor in sustainable energy where students can take a wide array of environmentally minded classes. City works on new recycling center sites. Director says new facilities are expected to be on southwest, northeast sides. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland is working on new recycling, large item, yard waste sites to replace the one currently taking in nearly 1,000 tons a year. Midland's current recycling situation has residents take objects that can be recycled or other waste to the Citizens Collection Station, 4100 Smith Road, or Butts Recycling Center, 26 West Industrial Loop. That will change in a little more than a year, according to Jeffrey Arlett, Director of Solid Waste for the City of Midland. He said the city is currently in the design phase for new city stations that will replace the North Central Midland location, which is located just north of Claydesta. Once designs are completed, the stations will go out for bid, and construction is expected to take a year. New facilities are expected to be on the southwest and northeast sides of Midland, Arlett said. Arlett said the Citizens Collection Station has served Midland well. More Midlanders were introduced to the station when city recycling operations were consolidated from numerous locations around Midland. Arlett said that the amount of recycling dipped to about 50 tons a month when the move to one location took place. However, after about 6 months, numbers started to increase to where it currently stands, 80 tons per month. When it comes to recycling accepted, the Citizens Collection Station and Butts Recycling both take number 1 and 2 plastics, cardboard, and aluminum. The city collection site also takes yard waste, including tree branches, trunks, and stumps. The city does its own mulching, which Arlett said can cause a mulch storm, another reason larger, more isolated areas will be planned. Quote, "It's not ideal in the middle of town, right around businesses," Arlett said. In a conversation with the Reporter Telegram, Arlett reiterated that while there are Midlanders who want to see recycling picked up curbside, that would create a few issues like cost and a transition from alley pickup that he said residents of Midland might not be ready for. There also isn't a huge demand for the recycling products that the city picks up, he said, with one recycler in Midland. Arlett also said that while the Citizens Collection Station remains open, there shouldn't be any issues with the drilling that is set to take place around Air Park. Lastly, Arlett said that construction debris is not allowed at the collection station. He added that there is staff on hand to help answer questions from dropping off the right recycling, large items, or yard waste. A golden opportunity. Midland High School grad enjoys 4 years as Marigold, Baylor University's newest mascot. The story was written by Iris Foster. Midlander Colby York is applying to occupational therapy graduate schools, and her resume is unique. For the past 8 years, she's been a school mascot, and she wasn't a gymnast or cheerleader first. As a freshman at Midland High, she prepared a skit on how to become Spike, the Bulldog mascot. Painting a pizza box yellow and black, and titling it Mascot Book for Dummies, she demonstrated her school spirit and how she could invigorate a crowd. For 4 years, she donned the purple onesie, the padded foam feet, and the 5-pound bulldog head, and cavorted through the sports seasons. Perhaps the fact that her father, Bishop Green, had been the mascot at Sam Houston State University influenced her, but she said she did make him aware of her tryout until she sent in the paperwork. Quote, I was always an extrovert, and maybe not as much as you might expect from the mascot. It was a very random thing for me and an outlet for my personality, she said. At Midland High School, one person served as mascot, and a sponsor oversaw her antics along with the cheer team. As college loomed, Colby admitted she applied to Baylor University with the idea of trying out for the mascot teams. Bruiser the Bear was just getting a sidekick, Marigold. Colby remembers she drove to Waco prom weekend to try out during Baylor's spring game. At Baylor, there are 4 to 8 people on each of the 2 mascot teams. Bruiser and Marigold have their own walk, characteristics, and personalities, she said. Therefore, one either wore the Bruiser or Marigold costume, and she was a Marigold. Lest you think this was an ad-lib situation, it was not. At 6 a.m., 2 or 3 times per week, depending on the sports season, the 2 mascot teams met to brainstorm, review TikTok and other social media, and develop their performances. That preparation paid off, as Marigold won Mascot Nationals twice. Since Marigold was a new addition to the sidelines, her first costume was an old Bruiser suit with long eyelashes and a crown of marigolds added. Eventually, during the 4 years Colby wore it, Marigold received a makeover, a beautiful brown bear suit topped with a lion jersey, green tennis skirt, and fancy flowered crown. Colby even received her own suit for safety protocols when COVID-19 became an issue. During football season, Marigold stirred up the freshman students who traditionally run across the field at the beginning of every game. Throughout the quarters, she and Bruiser and their 2 handlers walked among the crowd, interacting with fans and participating in sponsored events like photos in the president's suite. They even attended out-of-town games to rally the crowds. For basketball, Colby said Bruiser and Marigold split up, and she attended many in-town women's games as well as volleyball games. She threw T-shirts into the stands and gave away pizzas to spirited fans. On one occasion each year, she participated in a halftime show with the cheer and dance teams. Colby recounts that her freshman year, the football team went 11-1, which gave fans hope. The next year, Baylor won the women's basketball championship. As Marigold, she attended 2 football conference championships and went out of town 3 times for basketball playoff games. When did Colby study for her kinesiology degree? She says that's why there were 4 to 8 students on each mascot team. They were divided into squads, so during football games, the mascots switched off every quarter. Each squad attended 2 to 3 basketball games, and their sponsor kept tabs on members' attitudes, grades, and availability. Colby estimates she performed at 32 football games, 16 basketball games, and 12 volleyball games during her 4 years as Marigold, the lovable Baylor Bear. Colby said she even was nominated to the Baylor Homecoming Corps. Quote, the last 4 years have been amazing, Colby said, and I'll definitely miss it, end quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 7th. Betty Margaret Gemmel, age 99, longtime resident of Midland, passed away peacefully in Webster, Texas, on May 13th. Betty was born in Fort Worth, Texas, in 1923, to Hugh D. and Mary Ethel. She grew up in Fort Worth with 3 brothers and a sister and graduated from Polytechnic High School in 1941. Betty worked in Fort Worth as a secretary and assistant at City's Service Oil Company in the 1950s, where she met the love of her life, Edward J. Gemmel. They married in 1954 and moved to Midland in 1957. She was preceded in death by her husband, Edward J. Gemmel, son Gregory Gemmell, daughter Linda Thomas Keller, and brothers Jack and Doug. Betty is survived by her older sister Edie and younger brother David, two sons, Richard and Tim, five grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and 7 great-great-grandchildren. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 16th, at First Presbyterian Church of Midland, 800 West Texas Avenue in Midland. Memorials may be directed to the First Presbyterian Church of Midland or to Essential Hospice. Attention Jody James, 450 North Texas Avenue, Suite A, Webster, Texas, 77598. Note on the check, in memory of Betty Gemmell. Condolences may be emailed to BettyGemmellFamily@yahoo.com or left online at www.dignitymemorial.com. Charles Dennis Chuck Elmore of Fredericksburg, Texas, passed away on Saturday, July 2nd, at the age of 88. He was born on December 22, 1933, in Bell County, Texas. He is preceded in death by his parents, Dennis and Mabel Swope Elmore. Chuck is survived by his wife, Mona, of Fredericksburg, Texas, son, Mitch Elmore, of Fredericksburg, daughters Nan Pittman of Wolforth, Texas, and Kiki Elemento of Dalton, Georgia, as well as 9 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. Chuck graduated from Abilene High School in 1952, attended Hardin-Simmons University for 2 years, and then joined the Air Force. Chuck married Mona Altizer in 1959 in Cherokee, Texas. Chuck graduated from Southwest Texas State University in 1960. Chuck was a dedicated member of the First United Methodist Church in Stanton and served in many roles in support of the church. The family will receive guests on Wednesday, July 6th from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Services will be held at First United Methodist Church in Stanton on Thursday, July 7th at 11 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to First United Methodist Church of Stanton, New Century Hospice at 2210 Bandera Highway, Suite B2 in Kerrville, Texas, or Senior Citizens of Martin County. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Aideen L. Seeley, age 92, of Midland, passed away July 3rd. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 9th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Norma Elaine Hicks, age 80, of Midland, passed away on April 30th. The family will host a celebration of life Saturday, July 9th at 11:30 a.m. at Christ Church Anglican in Midland. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, July 8th, 2022. Norris giving back in big way. For Gavin Norris, it's all about paying it forward. Norris, who himself is a product of Ector County ISD, now wants today's kids at ECISD to have as many opportunities for success as possible. One way to help with that has been his law firm's annual school supply giveaway. Quote, every year we're looking at ways to give back to the community, end quote, Norris said. Quote, one of our focuses is how we can help kids first and then their family. It's one way that we find a way to give back to families that are in need of school supplies, especially in this economy, where everything isn't cheap, so we can help out, especially with education. That's important to us. Really, education is a big deal. I wouldn't be here without it. This is my way of giving back." End quote. The event has been going on for 4 years now, and this year's drive-up event will take place starting at 8 a.m. July 15th at 1000 West Clement Street in Odessa. The giveaway will last until the law firm runs out. This year, there will be about 530 backpacks and school supplies for students from K through 12. A child must be present in order to receive a backpack. Only one will be given to each child. The number of backpacks that have been given out has more than doubled since 2018. Quote, "When we started this a couple years ago, we were giving about 200 backpacks," end quote, Nora said. Quote, "We're blessed to increase the amount of backpacks each year. Last year we did 400, and this year is about 530 backpacks that we'll be giving out," end quote. The backpacks are full of school supplies. Quote, "We have the Ector County school supply list, so we have all the school supplies from the Ector County list," end quote, Nora said. Quote, "We have backpacks from K through 12. We have everything from a clear backpack to a high school student and junior high student, and cartoon backpacks for the kids. 500 is what we targeted. We're also going to give a portion of those to the Ector County Detention Center for the students there too," end quote. This year, the Norris Law Firm will be partnering with Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, in which Norris is also a part of. Quote, "One of the big models of the fraternity is to make sure they give back to the community," end quote, Norris said. Quote, "It's a service project. I'm a member of them. They're partnering with us to help give out backpacks and help support the community that way," end quote. For Norris, being able to give back to the community is important. Quote, "It's everything," end quote, Norris said. Quote, "As I matriculated through my early education years, I was a recipient of many people through the community who gave back. We've been blessed to have the opportunity to do the same for another child. It's just a way for us to give back and pay it forward." Quote, "There's another Gavin Norris out there. There's another Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. Sometimes we just need people to help us because of family situations or social economic situations. If this little bit helps a kid fulfill their dreams, then we've done what we've needed to do. If it helps some family out, it means a lot. Those of us who grew up here in Ector County and came through the public school system through ECISD, we take everything that has been given to us and we leave and we don't give anything back. We can't keep taking water from the proverbial well without putting more back into it. This is our way of putting more water back into the proverbial well," end quote. While the schedule says the event will run from 8 to 11 a.m., Norris has warned that they will probably run out of supplies in under 3 hours. Quote, "Normally in the past, we've run out in about 2 hours," end quote, Norris said. Quote, "We expect to be done by about 10 a.m. People should come early. I think last year people started lining up at 6 a.m. for this," end quote. Lawsuit filed following wreck in Odessa. Two businessmen who were in the process of remodeling a building on West Clements are suing an Odessa man who they claim destroyed the building after driving into it while drunk and the two bars that served him that night. Robert Valencia and David Valencia III are seeking more than $1 million in damages against Buffalo Wild Wings, Agave Bar, Dario Jesus Arona, and Ariel Sendante. According to the lawsuit, which was filed Wednesday in Ector County District Court, Arona and Sendante were intoxicated when they came into the Buffalo Wild Wings on North Grandview Avenue late on the evening of February 25th. And Arona was, quote, "encouraged to purchase and consume alcohol and was served an overserved alcohol," end quote, by the restaurant's employees, servers, and managers. The lawsuit further alleges the restaurant staff then allowed an, quote, "obviously intoxicated," end quote, Arona, 33, to get into a 2010 Dodge Charger and leave around midnight. According to the lawsuit, Arona then drove to the Agave Bar on East University Boulevard, where he was again encouraged to drink and was overserved despite being obviously intoxicated. The lawsuit further states that although Arona, quote, "presented a danger to himself and others," end quote, staff allowed him to leave instead of calling the police or for a cab or Uber. At 3:30 a.m., the lawsuit states Arona drove the Dodge Charger halfway through a building at 627 West Clement Street. The plaintiffs were remodeling to open a new business. The lawsuit states that because the Valencias were unable to secure the damaged business, it was vandalized, looted, and stripped, and the city of Odessa condemned and leveled it. Misty Meeker, a representative of the Howard Restaurant Group, which owns the Buffalo Wild Wings, declined to comment, saying they've not yet been served with a lawsuit. A call to Melanie Hallman, the registered agent for the Agave Bar, has not yet been returned. Arona is being sued because he drove while intoxicated, failed to control his speed, and otherwise caused the accident while driving on a restricted or suspended license, the lawsuit stated. Sandante is being sued because she owned the Dodge Charger and allegedly allowed Arona to drive it while drunk and when he was unlicensed, the lawsuit stated. The lawsuit alleges the businesses violated the state's dram shop laws and were grossly negligent in their actions that night. The Valencia's attorney, Rachel Ambler of Odessa, is seeking more than $1 million on her client's behalf. Quote, but defers to an amount the jury deems reasonable under the circumstances, end quote. According to online Ector County District Court records, Arona has pending court cases stemming from an October 2020 DWI arrest, a December 2020 drug arrest, and a drug arrest that took place 3 days before the lawsuit-related crash. An Ector County jury also indicted him in June after a pregnant Sandante accused him of assaulting her. Philip Wildman, the attorney representing Arona in the assault case, did not immediately return a phone call. TDHCA launches utility bill program. The Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs launched Texas Utility Help to help eligible low-income Texas homeowners and renters pay their utility bills, a press release detailed. The statewide program works to distribute funding from the Federal Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program and Federal Low-Income Household Water Assistance Program. Texas homeowners and renters may submit an application for Texas Utility Help if their household income is at or below 150% of federal poverty income guidelines and they meet other eligibility criteria. The maximum household income depends on the number of people living in the household. Full eligibility criteria are available at TexasUtilityHelp.com. Quote, we launched Texas Utility Help at the state level to make it easier for even more Texans to access and benefit from utility assistance programs, end quote. Bobby Wilkinson, TDHCA Executive Director, stated in the press release. Quote, the new program uses a streamlined online application process, so any eligible Texas household can apply for both energy and water bill assistance in a single form, end quote. Qualified applicants can receive assistance for their total past due amounts for electricity, natural gas, and propane, plus up to $2,400 in prospective payments. For water and wastewater assistance, qualified applicants can pay off their total past due payments and up to $600 in prospective payments. All payments are issued directly to the utility company on behalf of the applicant. Texas Utility Help has over $50 million ready for Texas homeowners and renters in need. Program staff are encouraging applicants to apply as soon as possible while these funds are still available. For more information and questions, the call center is staffed from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and can be reached toll-free at 855-566-2057. Help is available in multiple languages. Local news roundup. Three arrested in fuel theft. A quick-acting citizen helped police nab three men Wednesday they believe stole thousands of gallons of diesel fuel in recent days. According to Odessa Police Department report, a man called 911 because he believed men had placed a pulser device onto a gas pump at the Kentquick at 9th Street and West County Road. The device allowed the men to manipulate the pump into registering fewer gallons of gas than was being dispensed, and the men had managed to steal more than 2,000 gallons of diesel fuel using two trucks and auxiliary tanks, the report stated. Patrol officers located one of the trucks leaving the area, and inside the truck they found a remote control device for a pulsar device, the report stated. Yoni Garcia Ruiz, 26, Yuanqui Martinez Murata, 41, and Alexi Otero, 49, were arrested on suspicion of engaging in organized criminal activity and theft. According to OPD, authorities believe more than 3,600 gallons of fuel were stolen over the course of 2 days, but the investigation is ongoing. Ruiz, who was born in Cuba, remained in the Ector County Jail on Thursday on surety bonds totaling $12,000 and on an ICE hold. No bonds have been set for Murata and Otero as of Thursday morning, but Murata was being held by ICE. Odessan arrested following robbery. A 19-year-old Odessa man was arrested Tuesday after a North Golder Avenue resident told police he stole her iPhone 11 at gunpoint. According to an Odessa Police Department report, authorities received a 911 call about a robbery in progress around 11 p.m. Tuesday from a home in the 800 block of North Golder. When police arrived, a 33-year-old woman and several teenagers in the home told officers two strangers came into the home. Fired two rounds from a shotgun and stole a yellow iPhone 11. Officers traced the iPhone using an app to a 2020 Toyota Corolla registered to Anthony Ruben Fuentes, who told them he'd been, quote, cruising, end quote, at the time of the robbery. According to the report, officers obtained a search warrant for the Toyota and found the iPhone 11 under the driver's seat. Fuentes was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of six counts of aggravated robbery. He remained in custody Thursday on surety bonds totaling $300,000. Records indicate an 18-year-old man has also been identified as a potential suspect. According to online Ector County District Court records, Fuentes was placed on 3 years deferred adjudication on June 8th after pleading guilty to theft of a firearm. Teens arrested on weapons charges. Two Odessa teenagers were arrested Tuesday on weapons charges following a traffic stop. According to an Odessa Police Department report, an officer pulled over a Ford Explorer around 10:40 p.m. Tuesday near South Grant Avenue and East Clements because the vehicle wasn't insured. The officer discovered a 16-year-old was armed with a Taurus handgun and will be asking for prosecutors to file an unlawful weapons possessions charge against him, the report indicated. The officer, however, also found an AR-15 assault rifle and an illegally shortened shotgun in a spare tire compartment, according to the report. A passenger in the car, Jorge Juan Collins, 18, told the officer the guns were his and he knew the shotgun had been illegally altered, the report stated. Collins was arrested on suspicion of possession of a prohibited weapon. He was released from the Ector County Jail after posting an $8,000 surety bond. Matilda, the musical, comes to Midland Community Theater. Midland. It was a musical that was originally supposed to grace the stage at Midland Community Theater 2 years ago. However, a disruption in the form of a pandemic had other plans, and the musical was shelved for a couple of years. Now, Matilda the Musical will finally take place at Midland Community Theater, beginning with today's show. The show is scheduled to run at 7:30 p.m. on July 8th and 9th, 2:30 p.m. on July 10th, 7:30 p.m. July 15th and 16th, and again at 2:30 p.m. July 17th at Midland Community Theater. Director Bill Williams is excited to finally see the show come to light after the delay. Quote, "It was always a show that we wanted to do, so I'm glad that we finally have the opportunity to do it," end quote, Williams said. Quote, "It's just interesting because when you pick a show, you have certain kids that are in the group during that time, so the group has completely changed since we were originally going to do the show. It's given us more opportunities for our younger members of the group and also people who haven't been in a lot of shows that have an opportunity to do this musical. It's all worked out in a positive way," end quote. The musical is based on the famous children's novel of the same name by Roald Dahl. The story centers on Matilda, a precocious 5-year-old girl with a gift of telekinesis, who loves reading and overcomes obstacles caused by her family and school. The daughter of abusive parents, Matilda finds refuge in library books, which she reads quickly and in creating her own stories. Things are no better at school, where she also must face a tyrannical and cruel headmistress, Miss Trunchbull, who believes in Crunchum Hall's motto, Bambinatum est magitum, or children are maggots. Playing the lead role of Matilda is Celeste Trochinitz. Quote, "I really enjoyed how brave and out there she is," end quote, Trochinitz said of her character. Quote, "She really sticks up for herself and others, which I've really liked. She's very extroverted as well. I'm kind of the opposite. I'm very shy and very nervous, but she's been fun to play. I think it's helping me get out of my shell as myself, as a person, and in my acting as well," end quote. Trochinitz said this will be her sixth show. Quote, "It's really fun," end quote, Trochinitz said. Quote, "I really like doing this. I really enjoy it. I've been doing this since I was young, so watching myself and other people around me and being in shows with them and watching them grow has been really cool," end quote. Trochinitz also talked about this being her first time playing the lead role in any show. Quote, "I think I've handled it well," end quote, Trochinitz said. Quote, "It's really fun. This is my first time having a role this big. It's really exciting. The lines going really well, especially since I was really sick for a couple of rehearsals, so not having as much rehearsal time can make it challenging, but it's been a good challenge, end quote. In the musical, Matilda finds companionship in her teacher, Miss Honey. Though well-intentioned, Miss Honey is shy and fragile. She is taught to stand up against the adults in her world, and in doing so, discovers her own remarkable powers. The role of Miss Honey for this production will be double cast with Dana Ferrer de la Madrid and Jenna Perea, both playing the part. Quote, she's the very timid and shy person, end quote, La Madrid said. Quote, it's kind of the opposite of me, but also kind of similar to me. I do believe that Matilda influences her to grow as a person. It's really fun to play that and grow with her. She has a lot of emotions that I find relatable. She's very realistic to what the musical is. It's the very cartoony musical, but I feel like she's one of the realistic characters that people can relate to, end quote. Perea says it's been interesting with her and La Madrid both playing the role of Miss Honey. The way it works is that they take turns playing the role of Miss Honey each show. Quote, it's been interesting taking turns doing scenes, end quote, Perea said. Quote, everyone has to do them twice so that we can both have practices. La Madrid has been fun to work with. I wouldn't want anyone else to share the role with, end quote. This is the La Madrid's third production at Midland Community Theater, and she's enjoyed doing all of the shows. Quote, they've been fun, end quote, La Madrid said. Quote, I've got to meet a lot of good people who I'm glad I've gotten to meet. It's been a challenging show, so it's been hard at times, but it's really fun, and it's a great learning experience, end quote. This is also Perea's third show. Quote, I really enjoy getting to be involved with it and getting to meet new people, end quote, Perea said. Quote, I've enjoyed getting to know my character. For a while, I didn't know if I liked her. I thought she wasn't brave enough. I thought she was too much of a coward, but I realized that she actually does have a lot of character development. I think she's the most developed character of the show. At the beginning, she's this mousy, timid person that never stands up, but at the end, she stands up for everyone. It's wonderful, end quote. Playing the role of Matilda's father, Mr. Wormwood, is Ryan Smith. Mr. Wormwood can be described as a shady car salesman. Quote, that's what he does for a living, end quote, Smith said. Quote, he's a little crooked. You can definitely see that in his family life. He's trying to sell off these cars and get as much money as he can with the least amount of effort. He's trying to get rich quick. There's an interesting dynamic between him and Matilda because he's trying to make his family rich and do whatever he wants, and Matilda is telling him to not care about money and to enjoy books. There's kind of a big conflict between the two. I think Mr. Wormwood softens up to what she's trying to tell him, end quote. Playing the role of Mr. Wormwood has been enjoyable for Smith, saying he gets to have some funny lines in the show. Quote, there are a lot of good one-liners in there. Those really challenge me because there's a lot of audience interaction in there, and it's challenged my ability to make people laugh. Hopefully I've gotten better at that. I think that's been a big upside to this show, end quote. Smith, who recently graduated from Legacy High School, has done between 10 to 15 shows at Midland Community Theater. Quote, rehearsals have been pretty good, end quote, Smith said. Quote, I've been involved with a lot of shows. I've been here for 7 years. Most of our leads are barely freshmen in high school, and there are a lot of people that are incredibly young but really talented. It's been an amazing show, end quote. The show has 22 cast members. Rehearsals began in June. Quote, practices have been pretty good, end quote, William said. Quote, it's been a little bit hectic because we're doing our theater school camp at the same time. Then we come and do rehearsals, so I've been pulling 12-hour days in June. It's been tiring but also rewarding. There's so much talent that it does liven things up in the afternoon when you may be wearing down a little bit. You'll see this bit of acting that makes your eyes widen and say, that's marvelous. It's an exciting process, end quote. He's enjoyed seeing everyone come together and put on a good show during practices. Quote, I think it's great to see all these great talented actors come together and work, end quote, William said. Quote, I think when you're working with teens, you just try to keep a positive attitude, regardless of whatever obstacles are in the way. In a way, that's the story of Matilda. All this stuff happens to her, but she perseveres, and she's really gutsy. It doesn't matter what's coming her way. She makes it out to the best that it can be, end quote. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/HKACWNTV. Jungle Book set to take place at Permian Playhouse. 2 weeks of busily preparing for the upcoming show will come to an end this weekend when the production of Disney's The Jungle Book hits the stage at Permian Playhouse. The performances are part of the Playhouse's summer camp. The summer camps started on June 27th, beginning with auditions and then jumping straight into rehearsals with the kids. Quote, "We've been working hard ever since," end quote, director Kaylee Cerda said. Quote, "We have successfully blocked the entire show. We've learned the choreography to every single dance, and we've learned all the music, so we're on a good roll. Now, all we're focusing on is running the show multiple times and getting it into the students' minds and bodies and hearts and souls. They're doing amazing. We did our first run through on Tuesday, and it was so successful. I think they're going to put on a wonderful show," end quote. The summer camp is made up of 35 kids who will all be in the show. The show is based on the famous musical that most everyone is well familiar with. Quote, "We love doing shows that are from Disney because most students know those shows and are familiar with them," end quote, Cerda said. Quote, "They're comfortable with them, and these are shows that us as adults know as well," end quote. There will be three shows at Permian Playhouse beginning with a 7:30 p.m. performance today, 7:30 p.m. again on July 9th, and 2:30 p.m. July 10th. Tickets can be purchased at tinyurl.com/3WJSFZ8H. Cerda talked about the challenges of putting on a kid's show in 2 weeks' time, but said that the kids have been great to work with. Quote, "The time constraint has been the challenge, but students are so willing to learn," end quote, Cerda said. Quote, "I think that's because we've been so removed from theater because of COVID, and because of that, they're so excited to learn quick, jump in, and do whatever is asked of them. This is the first in-person camp since 2019. Quote, "Other than that, there's been no other challenges," end quote, Cerda said in putting on the show. Quote, "They're so excited to perform that you can tell that nothing's going to stop them. The 4th of July was a challenge because we took a big break between our rehearsals, but the kids came back and knew everything and are ready to go," end quote. About seven different directors are working on the show, including Sam Weeks as the musical director and Elizabeth Frederick on costumes. Cerda has directed numerous different shows throughout her life, but this will be the first summer camp show she's directed. Quote, "I've directed a show in the fall before during the school year, and I've done a few spring break shows," end quote, Cerda said. Cerda says she has enjoyed the challenge of directing this musical. Quote, "I love it," end quote, Cerda said. Quote, "I'm mostly excited because this is my son's, Chandler Cerda, first musical to be in, and I get to be a part of it. I get to direct him, but I love working with students, and I love theater." Frederick says this isn't the first summer camp she's worked with at Permian Playhouse. Quote, "It's been a lot of chaos and a lot of fun," end quote, Frederick said. Quote, "There's been a lot of fun," end quote. Getting the costumes fitted and ready may have its challenges, but Frederick has had fun with it. Quote, "It's been fun doing all the animals and figuring out creative ways to put the animals together in 2 weeks," end quote, Frederick said. Quote, "Seeing all the kids dressed up as those animals has been adorable," end quote. For more information on the show, go to tinyurl.com/3WJSFZ8H. Obituaries. David Baum, Odessa. David Carlisle Baum passed away Saturday, July 2nd, 2022, in his home in Odessa, Texas. Family and friends will gather to celebrate his life of 88 years on Saturday, July 9th, 2022, at 3 o'clock p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Visitation will be Friday, July 8th, 2022, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell will be officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. David Baum was born November 19, 1933, in Houston, Texas, to Mary Elizabeth Parker and Joe Brown Baum. David is preceded in death by his wife, Glenn. He is survived by daughter Cindy Baum Sims and her husband, David, son Tim Baum and his wife, Linda, sister Vicki Gwynn, and niece Penny Gwynn. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Bethany Christian Church of Odessa, the Odessa Food Bank, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. J. Alfred Chatham, Lone Star, Texas. J. Alfred Chatham, age 81, of Lone Star, Texas, passed away on Saturday, June 25, 2022, in Lone Star, Texas. He was born on January 27, 1941, in San Angelo, Texas, to J. Lee Chatham and Mamie Latimer. Jay is survived by his brother, Johnny Chatham of Florida, daughters Mariah Chatham of Lone Star, Texas, and Ona Ellison of Brady, Texas, grandchildren Michaela Ortiz, Brandon Ortiz, Corey Chatham, Courtney Chatham, Christina McBride, Jewel Farmer, T.J. Turk, Dustin Jones, and 16 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, J. Lee Chatham and Mamie Latimer, daughter Laura Middleton, son Garen Turk, and loving wife of 53 years, Marcia Ann Chatham, who passed 13 days prior to him. Family and friends will gather to honor Jay's memory at a private service. The family requests those who wish to express sympathy to consider making a donation to Jay's 10% discount fund. Gordon Michael Mike Christopher, Dallas, Texas. At 9:03 p.m., Gordon Mike Christopher, aged 67, passed from this life on Saturday, June 25, 2022, in Dallas, Texas, after fighting a long, hard battle with brain cancer. He was born on May 17, 1955, to Jonna and Gordon Christopher in Seminole, Texas. Mike is preceded in death by his father, Gordon Christopher. He is survived by his mother, Jonna Christopher, sister, Billy Hostenbach, and husband, John Hostenbach, and brother, Mitchell Christopher. He leaves behind three children, Heather DeArmond and husband Matt DeArmond, Michael Chase Christopher, and John Michael Christopher, and wife Emerald Christopher. Mike was a proud papa to 10 grandchildren, Grace Hughes, Ashton Orozco, Evelyn Orozco, Israel Orozco, Presley Christopher, Jax Christopher, Cooper Christopher, Wyatt Christopher, Avery DeArmond, Christian DeArmond, and one great-granddaughter, Clementine Orozco. He also leaves behind his beloved goddaughter and niece, Cozy Christopher, and her children, whom he loved so much. Celebration of Life with friends and family will be August 13, 2022, at 3 p.m. in Odessa, Texas, at the home of his son, John Michael, 6521 Piedmont Street. Please come with a smile, for the life he led was nothing but exciting.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.